Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Kia ora and welcome to the Wellington Access Radio 783 AM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. And my name's Pip and I'm an alcoholic. And hey everyone, oh nice, everyone's here, it's very cool. We've got some members from the Friday Night Living Sober meeting today, which meets at 5:30 on a Friday night. And one of the people here might be able to tell you where. Anyway, this is Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm going to read the preamble, which is read at the beginning of all Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and explains what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what it isn't. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. We're going to start this meeting with the Serenity Prayer, so we'll all say the Serenity Prayer. No. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. And as I said, we've got members from Living Sober tonight. That's right, isn't it? Yeah. And I'll just pass you on to one of them now to share their experience, strength and hope.
Thanks. Thanks, Pip. Oh, I'm Shane, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Shane.
And I'm very pleased to be here. I'll briefly talking about my historical story is that when I first picked up a drink at 14, I just believed that it was a way out for me because I lived in a lot of fear and inadequacy and things like and an unstable background and unstable home. So I was a bit of a dysfunctional teenager, I'd say, and pretty much that developed into a dysfunctional adult. But when I drank, I just felt like I found where I needed to be, that I could be the person I wanted to be, or who I thought people thought of me as, you know, like a better pool player or a better singing at karaoke or talking to others and so on, when a lot of times I don't remember because I probably was making a munt of it. But I did feel good about myself, and that's what alcohol used to do to me, for me. It was there was a lot of times when I enjoyed those times. The repercussions of those were that I didn't know how to drink socially, or, you know, like one or two drinks did not feature in my psyche, and I was always drank to excess and always drank to being insanely drunk often, and as a result, you know, may not have caused so much trouble in those days when it seemingly got away with it, but there were those odd scrapes and so on. But you know, there would always be the results the next day of, you know, oh, heck, what did I do the night before? Or why do I feel so terrible, you know, and ugly five-star hangovers, which were common for me. And swearing off each time I got one to say, well, I'll never do that again, and then do it again immediately that next evening. Eventually it got to a point for me where I was drinking not to run away anymore, but to drink because I had a craving of a bodily craving and an obsession of the mind and a craving of the body, which is what alcoholism is described in our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was drinking to satisfy that craving at the end. At that time, you know, which was over 11 years ago, I was a very broken individual. I had could not hold on to relationships. I was very disruptive. I was being often getting arrested and getting charged with crimes of violence. And I just was a very dysfunctional, very sick puppy. And I was trying to be a dad, a weekend dad as well at the same time. But my children, who were young at the time, were afraid of me because I had such a short wick. And so I was living a very, very decrepit, sort of miserable life filled with its own self-pity and everything that inherently goes with it, resentments, fear, and the prospect of possibly going to jail. This is when I found the program of AA, when I was invited along to AA, and I came, and of course, like most, wasn't happy about being here, and it was the last stop. You know, my days are over, the gates of Funsies slammed shut. I just thought it was going to be all ginger beer and Jesus. And I was a very, very miserable sort of character. But I resonated with what people were shared about, and I realized then in those early days that I was not the center of the universe, even though I thought I was. You know, like, I'm the only one that feels this way. No one knows how I feel, you know. Poor, poor, pitiful me, you know. And that's how it was. But I kept coming along to AA meetings as a very a dysfunctional, very sick person. And I found here, by being amongst people who were like-minded, I realized that they too were suffering from the same illness, and that some of them had come from very good homes and very good families and good backgrounds and good education and had good jobs, and that, but they were just alcoholic, you know. It just shows that this disease of alcoholism is very arbitrary. It doesn't care where you come from or what where on the level of echelon of society you are. You know, you can be anyone, and you can be an alcoholic. So it's not just exclusive to the drunk who's on the street in the bus stop with a paper bag. And so went to identify with myself as an alcoholic was quite a revelation. It was something I didn't want to be. But when I realized that what AA has done for me now in retrospect, because that's always nice to see in retrospect, when you're going through pain, it's always awful, that it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And pain was the motivator for change for me. It was the desperation, what we call the gift of desperation, to want to be motivated to go to change, because no one else wanted me, but AA would say, keep coming back. And I did keep coming back. And I learned how to do the 12 steps of AA, which is our spiritual part of our aspect of our program, which meant implementing in my life, believing in a higher power of my own understanding. And because I'd had a bit of a Christian background, I also blamed God. He was on the hit list as well when I was really angry. But I just reintroduced myself to him again, and I have God as my higher power today. You know, and I mean, I don't go to church. But that doesn't matter. Like, I pray to God every day. In the mornings, I get up and I read a bit of our literature and I pray. And then I get on with my day, and I'm able to stay sober because of a spiritual defense. Because alcoholics don't have one. You know, we try to have a mental defense and try to prove to others how we can drink responsibly. But we just don't have that mental defense. So it has to be a spiritual defense, and that comes from the program of AA. And the fellowship of AA is people who are encouraging and going through the daily struggles. You know, just because you're recovering in AA doesn't mean that, you know, life's not going to get tough. Doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, protected from, you know, suddenly, you know, it's only going to rain on people there and all the rain's going to avoid me. You know, you're going to go through pain and suffering and losses, and you just got to learn to deal with them. And you do learn to deal with them, because I think for me, I found that I learned to be not so reactive. And you know, I can say today that my wick is a hell of a lot longer. I can honestly say that my children love me and want to do things with me now. And, you know, instead of being the angry Mr. Frothy with eggs, with eyes looking like poached eggs, I'm the butt of their jokes. And I don't mind. It's all good. You know, I have a lot of respect for alcoholism. It's a deadly, dangerous thing. And, you know, you'll either die from a terrible accident or a car crash or something else, or even suicide because of alcoholism. But you know, this program saves people's lives. You know, if you're not dying that way, you'll die spiritually and you end up very lonely. And that's where I was heading. And I'm very lucky not to have done a lag inside, but I can count my lucky stars for the life I had today, and I'm very grateful for it. And I put that down to the God of my understanding, the program of AA, the fellowship of AA in Wellington, which is absolutely amazing, you know. And so my encouragement is to any alcoholics that are out there that, you know, like, just get in touch with AA and come along to meetings. You know, we're all, you know, we all come in from different ships, but we're all in the same boat. And I really encourage it. I think it's a great program for alcoholics, because controlled drinking for real alkies don't work. And for me, it has worked, you know. And I hope for myself, you know, from having some years, I've been 11 years sober now, and I have a very, very good life, despite its losses in that time and everything else that's going on. And we just kick into a regular life that regular people can handle. But I'd encourage anyone to who's alcoholic and who's struggling and desperate and lonely and fearful to come along to an AA meeting, and you'll find a lot of fellowship there, a lot of people who can resonate with where you are at. And, you know, we survive by being a we program. You know, like I'm just extremely grateful for the life I have today and for the people in AA. And I think I'll just like to leave it there. So thanks very much for listening. I'm Shane, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks, Shane. You're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. As you hear the stories today, you might relate and you might like to talk to someone about your drinking. You can get hold of Alcoholics Anonymous on an 0800 number. It's 0800 AA Works or 0800 229 675, and you can call that number from any sort of phone, a cell phone, a pay phone, a home phone, and there will be someone on the end of the phone. You can also get hold of information about Alcoholics Anonymous on the internet. We're at aa.org.nz, but if you Google Alcoholics Anonymous Zealand, you'll find us there as well. Throughout today, I'm just going to be reading a little bit from a pamphlet. We have a lot of literature in AA, and there is a pamphlet called 44 Questions, and there's just an interesting question here which I thought I'd share. The question is, if I come into AA, won't I miss a lot of friends and a lot of fun? And the way that this is approached in this pamphlet is with this answer. The best answer to this is the experience of the hundreds of thousands of men and women who have already come into AA. In general, their attitude is that they did not enjoy real friendship or real fun until they joined AA. Their point of view on both has changed. Many alcoholics discover that their best friends are delighted to see them face up to the fact that they cannot handle alcohol. No one wants to see a friend continue to hurt. Naturally, it is important to distinguish between friendships and casual barroom acquaintanceships. The alcoholic is likely to have many acquaintances whose conviviality may be missed for a while, but their place will be taken by the hundreds of AAs the newcomers will meet, men and women who offer understanding, acceptance, and help in sustaining sobriety at all times. Few members of AA would trade the fun that comes from sobriety for what seemed to be fun while they were drinking. So that's from the pamphlet 44 Questions, which you can also get online and have a look at. We're going to move on to our next speaker now. I wonder which microphone. Oh, she's going to go for that microphone. Here we go. Thank you.
Thanks, Pip. Hi, I'm Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Chelsea.
Very pleased and grateful to be here today. It was great hearing your story, Shane. I've only heard it a couple of times, and what you were saying about it takes all kinds in AA, that's certainly true where you and I are concerned, because the background you described and the background I had were two very, very different experiences. I had a very privileged background. I grew up in a nice family. My parents were a bit strange, but quite... but, I mean, whose aren't? And, yeah, grew up in a very stable environment, went to the same school throughout my school years, had good friends. I was a reasonably bright kid and did very, very well in school, maintained friendships, and everything was pretty normal and by the book, I suppose, for me. I never drank really through high school. I didn't really have a lot of those experiences. But then I moved to the big city to go to university, and during O week and everything in the initial stages of university, I began to socialise, obviously, and there was alcohol on offer, and I was at like a meet and greet event, and I was quite used to a small town environment, and there was a lot of people, and it was quite intimidating. I had gone from being the smartest person in a small town to being just one of a crowd in a very, very big town, and so I was terrified. And I went to an event, and I remember very, very clearly to this day what happened, and I was given a drink, and I drank it, and I immediately felt normal. I was 18 years old, and it was like the first 18 years of my life had been missing something, and I'd found it. It really was like that for me. And I found it, and I drank, and I thought, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I remember saying that to myself. I'm not sure how many people say that when they first have a drink, but I'm pretty sure not. It's not a normal thing to say. So my normal drinking didn't actually last that long. And when I say normal drinking, this is my perception only of normal drinking, which is going out and having a few drinks with people and a laugh, and then going home and getting out the next day and having breakfast and living your life like a normal person. That didn't last very long for me at all, because the way my mind worked was, I feel great after that one drink. I feel really good after two. So if I have 12, then I'll be amazing. And I didn't want to lose that feeling. And so it didn't take me long at all before. And this is embarrassing to admit. I had cask wine on the desk next to my bed in the hostel. So I would wake up in the morning, sit up, get a plastic cup and fill it with cask wine and drink it before I got out of bed, so I never had to be without my tonic. And for me, I didn't think that was weird at all. I just thought I was doing what I had to do to get through the day. Mm. And it increased from there. And then I discovered dark spirits and Lord, it became problematic from there. So I went very, very quickly from needing to have a couple of drinks in order to socialise, which I'm sure is actually true for a lot of people, to becoming disinterested in socialising and wanting to hide and isolate with my drink. And that happened very, very quickly for me. I was very lucky to be close to my older sister, and she expressed concern for the way I was drinking. We flattered together in my second year, and that was when my drinking really took off. And at one point, I remember her screaming at me, "Have you any idea what it's like to watch you kill yourself?" Mm-hmm. And I just thought she was being a square and being no fun. And so that just led me to hide my drinking more. And I had ways that I would hide my alcohol around the house. I don't know many 19, 20-year-olds who were hiding alcohol. And but people would say to me, you know, some people would say that I was drinking normally. You know, this is just what people your age do. And other people were saying, you know, this, the people who really knew me, had known me from when I was growing up, they were the ones who were waving the flags. I was going to church at the time, and someone in the church actually said to me, "Have you thought about Alcoholics Anonymous?" And that was the first time I had really thought about it at all. And I dismissed the idea outright, because like a lot of people, I had a perception of what an alcoholic was as being one of the homeless people in Myers Park who drank there out of paper bags and begged for money. I didn't realise there was a mainstream version, I suppose, of alcoholics. So anyway, one day I was walking home from university, and there was a sign outside a church, and it had the little triangle and the circle outside. And I didn't even think about it. I just went in and sat down. I didn't make a decision per se. It was almost like a decision was made for me. So I went in and I sat down and I listened, and there were all sorts of motley looking characters in there, and some normal looking people as I considered it as well. And most distinctive, there was a homeless guy in there who I walked past every day, and he was in there. And it was his story that I related to. He drank the way I drank. This is someone who I wouldn't have given a second glance. Indeed, I deliberately didn't give him a second glance, because I felt guilty that he was homeless and I wasn't. And here he was. He'd been sober for 6 years. And he had been drinking like I had been drinking. He had started drinking the way I had started drinking. And so I listened to that and I thought, shit. I didn't expect or want this to happen. I left that meeting and obviously kept drinking, because I didn't want to stop at that point. I thought it was incredibly unfair that at the age of 18, 19, I could be confronted with this and possibly have to face the fact that stopping drinking would be the right thing for me to do. And I didn't want that to be true. It just felt like I'd been horribly shortchanged. I felt like I had a lot more drinking in me. And so I went out and I tried to keep going. And it just got worse from there. I was drinking all day to go to university. I was drinking at home when I was by myself and didn't have to go out because those were my days off, so I got to do what I wanted, which was drink. I was cooking for my flat and drinking more alcohol than I was putting into the food. I was playing football drunk and passing out on the field thinking it was hilarious and not noticing the tragic glances I was getting. I never got arrested. I never crashed a car. I never became suicidal, although that certainly would have happened if I'd continued. I never did any of those. I never lost a job or anything like that. I never did any of those things that I thought real alcoholics did. But what I did have was that absolute obsession and craving for alcohol constantly, and that conviction in my head that I could drink normally if I just did this or if I just did that. You hear a lot of alcoholics talking about how they try to moderate or control their drinking. I never had the desire to do that. I just wanted to drink, and when I drank, I wanted to be drunk, and when I was drunk, I wanted to black out. And I lost periods of time. I'd be played voicemails by my friends that I wouldn't remember leaving for them. I'd turn up in places that I had no idea how I'd got there. And I was very, very lucky to remain physically safe throughout this time. And then the millennium was coming up, and I was very aware that I had an alcohol problem. It was time for me to stop. And it was too much pressure for me. I decided to give up for the millennium. So instead, I went on a two-week bender, and I don't remember anything about that time apart from at the end of that bender. I woke up one day, and I thought, I'm going to go to AA today. And that's what I did. I went to a meeting, and I sat down, and that was my day one. I didn't decide, I'm going to stop drinking today. I didn't decide the rest of my life is going to be this or that. I decided I'm not going to drink today, and I knew where the best place would be for me to not do that. There's a place called the 24-Hour Club in Auckland that did great meetings, and I went to that meeting and I was still drunk. There were a lot of young people there, and they just listened to me and talked to me. And the great thing about AA for me is because I had a background in the church, I was really scared of like an evangelical approach to AA, like people would try and get me into this cult and get me committed to things, or there'd be obligation to go, or if I drank again that I'd be banished, things like that. I never found that. All I found were people who I related to completely against my initial better judgments, and who showed a genuine love for a complete stranger. And so I kept going. That was 15 and a half years ago now. I feel really old when I say that. but I'm so grateful. I've been sober through living in three cities. I've been sober through a divorce and relationship breakups and job losses and all the rest of it. The normal things that people go through in life. But I've managed to proceed through those without taking a drink. I liked what Shane said about dealing with the realities of life sober, because that was the next challenge. Once you don't have that cushion or that haze you can escape into, reality becomes a lot more stark and raw. And having a fellowship around me and a program by which to deal with these things, I don't know where I would be without it. And I honestly don't know how normal people deal with life, because if I didn't have AA, I would be... Can you say fucked on air?
Consider it said.
The fellowship in Wellington here is amazing. There's so many meetings and so many different people here you can meet. Since I've been in AA, I've discovered that I can actually have long-term maintained friendships with other people that don't have obligations or anything associated with them. I've got people I can go out with every Friday and have a bite to eat and a yarn, and people from all sorts of walks of life. I've been hugely, hugely grateful for what I've had through this program. Day to day, my challenges now are to keep going to meetings even when I think I'm cured. Once you think you're cured, you definitely need a meeting. To continue to make time to reach out to other alcoholics, because that's this program in action. And helping others stay sober keeps me sober. I'll leave it there. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
Thanks, heaps. You're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. We broadcast this meeting over Wellington Access Radio on 783 AM. So we're grateful for them letting us do that. You can ring Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere in New Zealand on 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 675. We're also on the internet, as I said before, on aa.org.nz. We realise that a lot of people all over the world listen to this program, and if you come to the New Zealand website, aa.org.nz, there are a couple of links that will take you to the sort of world website of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll be able to get information hopefully through there about meetings that are in your area. So if you've heard anything that you know, makes you think about your drinking, or makes you think that you would like to talk to someone about your drinking, there are plenty of ways to get hold of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as Chelsea was talking about, one of the real high points of the program is that we really enjoy carrying the message of AA and talking to people who need help or who are interested. So do get in touch. That would be great. So either on 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 675, or by going to our website, which is aa.org.nz. And now we've got another speaker.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Tony and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tony.
And great sharing. Thanks, guys. I was thinking, actually, why do we call it sharing? And I think sometimes the vocabulary of recovery for me kind of put me off. I was like, well, is it called in the rooms? Is it called the fellowship? Is it, you know, will I say the wrong thing and people will laugh at me? But, you know, it just occurred to me that we talk and we call that sharing because I'm not like the other two speakers in many ways, but I have totally shared the emotions and the feelings and the desperation and also the highs, the serenity that they've talked about too by, discovering that actually my problem was alcoholism and finding a solution to it, which is AA. And it's really interesting that we hear so often from members that, they worry that they're not the type of person that needs to go to AA. You know, AA is for different type of people, not for me. And my first introduction to AA was one of my very best friends who went to AA about 5 years before I did. But I could not talk to her about it. I knew what she was doing. She was quite open about it. And we could all see, as a group of hard-drinking friends, that she was changing, she was settling down, she met a guy, she fell in love, she got married, she was happy, she had children, and none of that seemed to be anything, to do with the fact that actually she was sober and living a happy life in this way. But I remember being at parties and things and actually not being able to approach her. And I think now, looking back with hindsight, I just recognised myself in her and why she had felt she needed to stop drinking. And, you know, we were very similar backgrounds. We met at university because we had the same interests. We studied the same course. And we did the same kind of work after university in the same town. And, I did not want to hear from her that I was just like her. And in fact, when I did have the gift of desperation that's been mentioned already, and I turned to AA myself, she was one of the last people I told. Because again, I kind of still felt like, well, you know, maybe there's a way out of this and I can change. Because like Chelsea mentioned, you know, when I first went to AA, it wasn't because I knew that I was going to stop drinking, hopefully, forever, or anything like that. I just didn't have any long-term plan. I knew that I couldn't go on the way I was going on, and something had to change. And my home group here is Friday Night Living Sober, and that's at 5:30 Friday evening, when work is finished for a lot of people. And you kind of think, ah, what shall I do after work on a Friday? Where are all my mates going? They might be going to the pub. I'm going to an AA meeting. And that's where I meet my mates, actually. And we read another piece of AA-approved literature, the book called Living Sober, alongside of our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I was, when I stopped drinking, completely obsessed by alcohol and drinking it and getting it and how it made me feel, and how I believed other people or other events in the world made me drink alcohol in the way that I did. And so I needed something like the book Living Sober, and other people sharing other people's experience and their strength and their hope around stopping drinking it to know how to get on. I didn't know how to leave the house and go to work without drinking alcohol. I didn't know how to leave work and get home without drinking alcohol. I certainly didn't know how to have a relationship. I couldn't have a relationship with my parents without alcohol. I used to go to their house sometimes because it was free alcohol there. And also, my mum smokes, and she was one of the few people left who smoked indoors, which was great, you know. So we could have a cigarette in the kitchen together over a whiskey. I just didn't know how to be by myself in my own flat without alcohol and not go, you know, slowly mad at first and then quite quickly mad at the end. And like Chelsea said, I don't actually know why I went to, well, I didn't just go to my first meeting in the way that she did. I actually reached out, and I decided that AA in general wasn't for me because I was a very special and different type of drinker. And I needed a very special and different meeting, otherwise I wasn't ever going to go. But I was fundamentally very, very scared that I would be in another group of people with whom I felt no affinity. Mm. And therefore I would be the outsider in AA. I was the outsider everywhere else in life, and to be the outsider in AA seemed pretty much the worst thing that I could think of at that time. So I didn't phone the AA helpline first. I actually phoned a lesbian and gay helpline and said, look, you know, I just think I've got a problem where I don't seem to be able to stop drinking once I start to drink, and that's happening every day. And do you happen to know if there's such a thing as a gay AA meeting? Because if there isn't, I'm not going to go, so shut up. And, you know, something was looking out for me, because the person who answered the phone on that helpline said, oh, well, as a matter of fact, I'm a member of AA, and yes, I do know, and here they are. And I was like, damn. And we chatted, and he said, but really, it might be quite good if you phone the AA helpline now and speak to somebody there. So, of course, I drank some more and waited 12 hours. And then I did phone the AA helpline the following morning. And again, somebody, something, some presence was looking out for me that day, because the person who answered the phone said, Yeah, no problem. Gay meeting every day in this town. And in fact, I'm the greeter of the one that's on tonight. I'll see you there. and that was it, really. But I still remember my knees knocking with fear, literally, walking into that meeting, even though the person on the door was looking out for me and said, hi, here's a chair. Do you want a cup of coffee? I couldn't hold that coffee because I was so scared. It splashed, and I had to put it down and pretend I didn't want it. And that's how I entered AA. But it just seems that so quickly I made friends because I understood a lot of what people were talking about. And even though in my initial fear I probably just didn't hear a lot of what was being said, there was something in that room which some people refer to as the AA miracle, you know, I don't care what language is used, it worked for me, that brought me back. And for some reason or another, I haven't had to have an alcoholic drink since that first meeting. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. And that has nothing to do with my own strength and power. That's to do with people in AA understanding how I felt when I walked in. There were just a lot of very sympathetic and empathetic people in that room who could see a new person on the verge of tears, literally shaking with fear. And, you know, I learnt that I had a sort of three-party illness. I was physically unwell, and that was very clear to me. I couldn't stop shaking, and I had some other physical symptoms that were rather unpleasant and not for the radio. I was mentally unwell because I couldn't connect the dots in my brain between the alcohol and the life I was leading and my emotional kind of health on the inside. And spiritually, as has been referred to by other people, I was dead. I had no spirit. I didn't know I was supposed to have a spirit. You know, it had nothing to do with religion and being saved at the end of my life. It was just non-stop drudgery because there was nothing to look forward to. I had no hope, and I certainly had no peace of mind. And what AA's given me, what they promised, and what luckily it's delivered for me, has just been peace of mind. And, you know, I couldn't have fun if I had no peace of mind, because I was always looking over my shoulder for somebody else, you know, for somebody laughing at me or making fun of me or, you know, after me or whatever, or for me to get another free drink from, because for some reason or another I never seemed to have enough money in my pocket to have all the alcohol I wanted. And so even when I was out drinking with my friends before, ostensibly having fun, I wasn't, because on the inside I was completely screwed up, completely waiting for something dreadful to happen, even if it was just making a complete mess of myself and having to be taken home yet again. It got to the point where some people who I didn't know recognised me in town, because I was the one that was always led out, you know, and bundled into the back of a taxi, and that was the end of a good night. So coming into AA has meant that I've had the peace of mind and the space in my brain, if you like, to be able to nurture relationships, be myself in a way that's acceptable to other people, and actually have fun without any kind of guilt or bad feeling at the end of it. And that's just one thing. That's just one thing that my sobriety has given me, you know. So that's where I think I'll leave my story today. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, guys. You're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. We broadcast on Wellington Access Radio 783 AM. If you want to get hold of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can do that in New Zealand by ringing 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 675. What I'm going to do in a minute is ask Shane to read how it works. I think he's got a copy of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, which sometimes is referred to as the big book in AA. It's our primary text, and you can get copies of this at public libraries, and you can also get copies of it online if you're interested in Alcoholics Anonymous and drinking. It's not a bad place to start. So I will get Shane to read from How It Works, which is chapter 5 of our book.
Sure, thanks, Pip. This is chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C. That God could and would if he was sought. Thanks.
Thanks, Shane. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming along, you guys. And we'll close the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant
me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
That program was brought to you by Ones and Access Radio. Get your voice heard.